And welcome again to the Taiwan Radio Lounge. I am Sonic. I am joined by Steve. Hello?
Yeah. You won't hear him because he's too far away from the mic.
Fajik, hello.
Hello. Hello.
And Swami.
Namaste and blessings.
And we have the pleasure of being joined this evening by Pippa King. Hello, Pippa. Welcome to the lounge.
Well, thank you very much for having me. It's much appreciated. Lovely to be here.
I just came across your work on... I was just listening to a 21st Century Wire earlier this year and was just scared and astounded by what you were talking about. So I thought it'd be good to get you on to... delve deeper into that murky world of surveillance. so how did you become aware and then start to research all this?
Well, golly, this goes back to 2004 when my children were 6 and 7 years old. And they were at primary school. There was only 160 pupils in the primary school. And I spotted a sort of credit card size fingerprint reader in the library. And it was only by chance that maybe even a couple of weeks earlier, I'd been on the internet and read this article about fingerprinting children in primary schools so that they could wander in and out of the library and just put their fingerprints on a scanner and then scan their own book and, it, you know, promote sort of reading in schools and that. And I remember read the article, I just thought, oh, that's never going to catch on. It's just outrageous. And then I couldn't believe it, really, only a couple of weeks later when I saw the exact finger scanner in my son's school. So I was on the PTA at the time and I approached the head and said, look, you've got this fingerprint scanner. When are you going to ask for my permission to fingerprint my children? Because I'm not going to give it. And she just looked me squarely in the face and said, I don't need your permission to fingerprint your kids. And I was pretty gobsmacked because any parent who's got any children in primary school or secondary school or even sixth form college, you have to sign consent for them going off school premises, medical treatment, food tasting, school trips, anything like that. And I just thought it was bizarre that the school could take my children's fingerprints and not have to tell me about it. So I actually went back to the website that I read the article on and got in touch with the person who'd written the article, which was a lady called Terry Doughty, and she was running a small operation called Action on Rights for Children. And I said, you know, this happened in my kids' school, and the head teacher's telling me that she doesn't need my permission to take my children's fingerprints at 6 and 7 years old. And she said, well, you know, she's absolutely right, because our Data Protection Act in the UK was passed in 1998, and of course, fingerprint or any sort of biometric technology, facial scanning, iris scanning, just wasn't around then. So the Act, that particular piece of legislation, hadn't accommodated for taking that sort of information from anybody, let alone a child. So I think in Section 2 under the Data Protection Act, there's something that lists sensitive personal data. So if any establishment wants to process sensitive data on you, which would be ethnicity, religion, sexuality, whether or not you've got a criminal record. There's only about 7 or 8 sort of items listed under Section 2, and biometrics isn't one of them. So because biometrics isn't classed as sensitive personal data, then the school could take that information from my child, process it in whatever form they wanted to, and not ask for my information about it. So I'm going to just explain the biometric is, because I sort of talk about it and just presume everybody knows, but the word biometric, bio means life and metric means measure. So basically it's any sort of measure of your physical form or even cognitive or oral, like voice form of yours. So that's what biometric means. So that includes fingerprints, iris scan, facial recognition, infrared palm scanning, which they did in schools, all four of which have been done in schools, voice biometrics. There's things called cognitive biometrics, which is measures how you type on a keyboard and the pauses between the letters that you type. So basically schools from 2001 in the UK up to 2013, were able to take any child's biometric information. Like I said, the schools had been taking fingerprints, infrared palm scans, infrared fingertip scans, iris scanning they tried in a school in Darlington. Facial scanning was tested in schools in Gloucester. And I think we were the only country globally that was using this, partly because our Data Protection Act was quite loose in the form that it hadn't specified this type of data on a person as being sensitive. So the biometric industry basically came in to UK schools in 2001 and threw whatever biometrics they wanted to at the schools for things like registration, cashless catering, locker, to get into lockers, fingerprints for library systems. And so I sort of came in 2004 and found out about it. And as I say, got in touch with Action Rights Children. And Terry, the lady that was running it, sort of said, look, I've had a few parents that have been in touch about this across the UK that are really concerned about it. Do you want to try and coordinate a group of parents so we can put some pressure on Parliament to get a change in the Data Protection Act, I think, was what we all really wanted to do, but that didn't actually happen. So I did. And there was myself and another parent called David. He set up a website called Leave Them Kids Alone. I set up a blogspot site called Biometrics in Schools. And I just thought, you know, when I set my website up, I was just sort of cataloguing different instances of biometrics in schools happening around the UK, because it wasn't happening in the States or anywhere else. So it was very specific to the UK. And I just thought, oh, nobody's going to read this. It'll just filter out. The technology won't catch on. And anyway, it did. And it started happening in the States, and now it's happening in Australia. So there was a group of about 5 to 9 of parents that were really sort of quite active. And we worked together with Action on Rights for Children, who wrote the initial article that I saw on the fingerprinting in schools. We worked with No2ID. They were really great, No2ID, because at the time, sort of 10 years ago, they were fighting the biometric identity card for adults in the UK that then Labour government wanted to bring in. And they sort of saw fingerprinting children in schools as desensitizing the next generation to accepting a biometric ID card. And I absolutely agree with them. I think they're right. I think it does desensitize kids. We worked with Privacy International, and they, as lobby groups to MPs, enabled us as parents to have some access to MPs that were against this sort of technology in schools. And interestingly enough, up to 2010, we had a Labour government, and the Labour Education Department really wouldn't speak to us at all about this or whatsoever. Their attitude was, well, schools aren't breaking any laws, nothing to do with us. They had no idea how many kids have been fingerprinted. They had no idea about the hardware or the software that was being used in schools. I mean, the particular technology that was being used initially in schools was issued by a company called Micro Librarian Systems, based in Manchester. And they actually approached the Information Commissioner in the UK. And the Information Commissioner in the UK oversees the Data Protection Act. So they approached the Information Commissioner and said, would it be okay
just
to use fingerprint? Yeah.
Go on.
Yeah, I don't know if you're aware, Pippa, but you mentioned the Labour government were being a bit evasive just then. It was David Blunkett's company. David Blunkett owns a company in
Run Biometrics,
something, and he was going to be the one who was going to benefit most from the identity card. Did you know that?
Oh, interesting. I didn't know that. No. Right,
yeah,
okay, that doesn't surprise me.
He was the one that was pushing it, because he was Home Secretary at the time.
That doesn't surprise me at all, because, there's particular... I've had experience with that in the House of Lords, where there was a peer there that was pushing something to do with the biometrics, with the school thing, and he had a biometric company as well. That doesn't surprise me at all. But I'd say the Labour government were just didn't want to know at all. So we ended up speaking as a group of parents to the Lib Dem shadow education secretaries and the Conservative shadow education secretaries, who were then, I think, Sarah Tether for Lib Dems and Nick Gibb. Tom Watson, who was in Labour, actually did ask some written questions in Parliament. So, and it was really interesting because they were against it, but they were sort of pretty powerless because they couldn't do anything because they were in opposition. So they asked, I think we had about 30 odd written questions asked in Parliament. There was a couple of debates on it. I think we had three early day motions, and an early day motion is where it's like a petition within Parliament. So you put down, I'm against X, Y, and Z, and MPs sign it. It doesn't really amount to anything, but it was good that we had at least a little bit of that going on there. And the Conservative and Lib Dems said to us, you know, if we get into power in 2010, we'll do something about this. And so that was good that they said that. But it was interesting because through that time, from sort of 2004 to 2010, myself and David, another parent that's really prominent, we had emails in from parents all around the UK saying, you know, my child's, you know, we've objected against my kids being fingerprinted. My child has been told that he's not allowed to eat a school hot school meal. He's not allowed in the canteen. The children in Leeds at Morley High School were made to go and eat their school dinners outside in a shelter, regardless of what the weather was like. There was kids in London that got made to eat last at the end of the dinner queue, behind all the kids that have been fingerprinted. And it's interesting because, I mean, one of the reasons why I objected against it was because the parent, knowing adult society, we don't use any sort of, well, we didn't back then anyway, sort of in 2004, use any sort of biometrics at all to access things like food, knowledge in the form of library books, access to certain areas. And I just thought, this is sending a really subtle psychological unconscious message to my children that were 6 and 7 at the time, that in order for somebody to feed you or to give you a book or to give you knowledge or to let you into a certain area of school, you have to give up your fingerprint. And that's just was unacceptable for me. And looking at how schools treated children who, and families as well, because some families were told, if you don't like it, take your kid elsewhere. And this was, and it was quite surprising really how belligerent schools were about this, because having had kids in school, I suppose not for very long, with them being 6 and 7, but they were, the schools were really, some, well, the schools that were taking it on board and parents were objecting to it, really quite belligerent about how they treated the children that weren't being fingerprinted. I've never seen this sort of prejudice happen at all in schools. And so basically, if you were lucky, as a parent, you were told that your kids had been fingerprinted and you could opt out. But in most cases, schools just fingerprinted children and parents didn't know about it, because children in a school or in a compliant environment, they will just go, if the teacher says, there you go, you've got to put
it's
your fingerprint
mentality,
on here.
It's herd mentality, isn't it? They use that.
Yeah.
They just prey on the herd mentality, don't they?
And children,
well, and for those of us who grew up in a world where the only time you got fingerprinted was when you got arrested, or unless you're going into some job that requires that sort of thing, this is not part of our everyday life in any way.
No, I agree. And it's almost, I suppose, to a lot of parents, it was sort of, in our minds, sort of criminalizing children or giving them that sort of same status. But interestingly, Swami, sort of talking about that, it was in 2007, only 3 years after I sort of found out, you know, schools could do this, we had a House of Commons Select Committee look at the surveillance state. So a Select Committee is made up of maybe about 8 to 10 MPs, and then they ask people, or I'll put it open to the public, basically, anybody can submit a paper or and sort of talk about surveillance state. And the Deputy Information Commissioner was interviewed here, they obviously the Data Protection Act, and there was two questions asked by a particular baroness, and she asked, can school database, fingerprint databases be accessed by the police? And he said, yes, they can, and there's programs that can make the school database talk to the police fingerprint database. And she then said, what would justify that? And he said, a very low-level crime, and the school wouldn't have to tell the parent or the child that data had been transferred. So whenever we put a fingerprint on a fingerprint reader, what happens is the fingerprint reader looks at the whoops and swirls of your fingerprint, sort of plots a little map of the salient points of your fingerprint, and then converts the angles or the points of that map into maybe a 10, 30, 40 digit number. And that essentially is sort of a digital depiction of your thumbprint, whatever fingerprint, whatever it is. And that number can easily be transferable across databases. So we thought in 2007, as parents and pressure groups, privacy groups, we maybe send a freedom of information request to all the police forces to see if they've actually ever accessed a school database. But then we sort of did a double take and thought, no, actually, if we do that, that'll give them a heads up that they can do it. So we didn't actually do that at the time. But I did do it in 2013. But to finish the sort of story. So the Conservative and Lib Dems did get in 2010. And to be fair, they did do something about the fact that schools were taking this data off children without telling parents. So in 2011, there was a Protection of Freedoms Bill that got proposed to Parliament, and in that there was things like the police retention of DNA, and there was stricter conduct about surveillance cameras and how they were used. And in Chapter 2, Clauses 26-28, we got three clauses that dealt with schools taking children's biometrics without parents' permission. So it was the first law legislation globally that was ever passed dealing with under 18-year-olds biometric information in schools, which is great. And I would have personally liked to see the Data Protection Act changed, but we didn't get that. But the good thing about the Protection of Freedoms Bill is that if schools want to take a children's biometrics, they need to get in touch with both parents. If one parent consents and the other parent objects, the objection overrides the consent. If both parents consent and the pupil actually objects to it, then the pupil's objection overrides the consent. So it's really good in the fact that whoever objects overrides consent. So as of 2013, I mean, that bill was passed into an act in May 2012, but as of September 2013, now schools have to gain written permission from parents to process children's biometrics. So that was a long haul.
Well done. That is brilliant.
That's the Protection of Freedoms Bill.
It's the Protection of Freedoms Act 2012, Chapter 2. So, but it's unfortunate because schools get a myriad of paperwork from the Department for Education, I guess month in, month out, and they were all informed that this was legislation, but I've had parents that have been in touch since September 2013 and said, my kids were fingerprinted without my consent. There was one child in London whose parents were asked for consent. They didn't consent. The child was still put in the queue to get his fingerprints taken. And then he said, look, I don't consent. He was put in isolation for a day because he didn't consent. So there's still this awful belligerence
and
against...
What did the parents do about that? Were the parents... Did the parents not come into school and say, what the hell are you doing?
I was in touch with the parent, and she was actually in the legal profession, and I said, are you going to at least ask for an apology? And she said, I don't want to create any problems with the school. And this is what I had, because when I challenged the head teacher back in 2004 about her taking my kids' fingerprints, and she told me she didn't have to ask for my permission, I then wrote to the Shadow Education Secretary, who was actually David Cameron at the time. I wrote to the head of the local authority, and Privacy International, and O2ID, and everybody else. And I just bombarded people with emails. And the local authority sort of got it out of me which primary school it was that was doing this. And they obviously got in touch with the school. And as a consequence, I basically got sent to Coventry. The teachers, were told not to speak to me because they didn't speak to me for about two terms. I was obviously branded a problem parent just because of this. It's quite sort of emotive because, you know, if you give your children to a school for 6 hours a day, a lot of parents don't want to challenge it. And this is why it sort of got rolled out so successfully, I suppose, because I suspect, I mean, it's certainly in the school that my children are in, a good 40% of the parents weren't happy, but nobody would say anything. And it was just me. I stuck my head above the parapet.
Yeah, that used to really annoy me as well, things like that, because I'd be the one that would be sort of making waves and I expect sort of to get some support from other parents, and nobody would really, you know, stand up and and say much, really. So you do, I mean, I ended up joining the governors on the school so that I could poke my finger in. But, you know, you do, and even then, like you say, you get a bit of a cold shoulder thing. But I did make them, they had to change the sex education, the way they taught sex education in the school, because they were using videos that I didn't think were appropriate. So.
And you stopped an advertising.
Well, do you know?
Oh, yeah, and I stopped an advertising hoarding being put up as well. But, yeah, you do. You have to sort of put. Hello? We lost you there. Yeah, you have to sort of put yourself forward a little bit like that, and start. I think that, like, you know, if you were in the playground with you and your kids and someone started telling your kid what to do all the time and it was things that you didn't necessarily agree with, surely parents would step forward and say, look, you don't speak to my kids like that, or, you know, but because it's in school and it's like, oh, we've got to send them there every day, or I don't know, that it just seems to be that people have this like, oh well, just, you know, get on with it sort of thing, and I just find that a really difficult attitude to deal with, really, especially when you're faced with things like this.
It's interesting because, you know, I went into the school system, I mean, I'm in the mid 40s now, but I went to the school system obviously at 4 years old and left sort of 18, and you just get taught for that 14 years to do what you're told by a teacher. And I saw it when I was taking my kids to primary school. If a teacher says something, quite a lot of the parents go back into pupil mode again and say, oh, the teacher's told us to do this, so we're going to do it. And I think there's that sort of decade plus of conditioning that we all had as kids to do what teachers tell you to do. And also as well, interestingly enough, when you confront teachers, they're so used to telling people what to do, kids what to do, they sort of can't compute it when a parent goes against that. I had sorry, go on.
Sorry,
that's why they overreact.
I was just agreeing, sorry. But yeah, they do, they speak to you like a child and expect you to react in the appropriate way, and when you don't, then it gets their heckles up a little bit.
Absolutely. No, there's some, I used the Freedom of Information request, because we have a Freedom of Information Act in the UK, which means you can ask any sort of public body or anybody that's getting funded by public money any question, and they should be able to answer you. And so I used that particular piece of legislation to get data out of schools as to how many schools were using fingerprint technology, the sort of take up and the amount of kids that were using it. So myself and Action on Rights Children sort of advised the Protection of Bills Committee when the legislation was going through Parliament as to what the situation was with sort of using biometrics in schools. But I had one particular school in Hull, where I am, primary school, said, you know, we're going to report you to the police for asking these questions. I got told by Tower Hamlets authority that I was going to be investigated to the highest sort of for asking these questions. And I just thought, I'm just asking questions, you know, after. And it's been really odd seeing how schools have acted around this technology. And I don't know whether this, I mean, I have absolutely no evidence of this whatsoever. I think schools did pay to have the technology in there. But I think also as well, the biometric industry, because it had no other testing ground globally, basically used the UK school system from 2001 to easily 2011, 2012 to develop the technologies. For example, there's a Japanese company called Fujitsu, and back in 2007, they were testing infrared palm scanners in a primary school in Glasgow. And infrared palm scanning didn't even become commercial till only 2 or 3 years ago. So this was back in 2007. So they were testing this technology on, well, I'm saying that. Obviously, it was my perception of it because it wasn't being used anywhere else in the world. So, they were testing.
Why the hell did they need to palm scan the children in school? What was that all about? Was that again to have lunch or something?
Yeah, it was for primary school children to eat their lunch. So parents would open a PayPal account where you'd put money in, and then when the kids had got whatever they needed to have, rather they would just present their palm or their fingerprint or their iris at the till, and then that till would say, yes, this is John Smith, and then it would deduct the account. And that's how it works in schools now.
It's almost like begging, wow, isn't it, putting your palm forward to get food?
and it's very much along... Oh, go ahead, Steve.
I was just going to ask Pepper, have you got any evidence of any sort of kickbacks going on with schools and biometric companies?
Yeah, are they selling the data?
No, well, I mean, sort of the more people you get, like having your vaccination, the sort of doctor will get his money from the
more vaccines you give, the more money the doctor gets.
Is there any evidence of that the biometric companies are sort of giving any money to the schools who are using these things?
I haven't seen any evidence of that, though it's difficult for me to do that because I can't use the Freedom of Information Act on private companies. They will absolutely be processing the data that they get from schools to their product more. Sorry, go on.
The reason I was asking was why are the sort of school being so anal about people not doing it? Because it sounds to me like they're sort of getting some kind of sort of payment
They're being pretty heavy about it.
Yeah.
Or they're just getting the technology for either free and or maybe at lower cost to everybody else, under the proviso that the data collected is shared with the companies. I'm sure that's pretty standard practice with technology companies
they would be more adamant you used it if they were getting some sort of reward for using, you know what I mean?
Well, it immediately brought to this Swami's mind Henry Kissinger's statement that you control nations with oil, but people you control through food. So if you condition people that you got to give this print in order to get your food, how natural does that become?
Well, for the next generation, certainly in the UK and in the US now, Swami, there's quite a few states that are using biometrics over there that children will think it's going to be, they won't think twice about giving a fingerprint up to get fed.
Right.
And this will be married with, by the time that they're, sort of adult age, the reduction in using cash and just using biometric means to pay at supermarkets and shops.
Absolutely. No, interesting. I mean, we because I learned so much about the education system up to 2010, 2011, when, sort of campaigning against this technology in schools, we decided to home educate our children. So we pulled them out of mainstream education. We home educated my two sons that were only one school year apart, so it was fairly easy, in that sort of respect. So at the age of 11, they came out of mainstream education, and up to the age of 16, we educated them at home. And then a couple of years ago, my eldest son went back into mainstream education, into sixth form college, and this particular September that he went back in again, we had a note from the college saying, "We're going biometric." I just thought, oh no. But they went completely cashless to the point where I didn't consent for his biometrics to be taken. And I think I had to buy a lab coat for him for £10. And so I gave him £10 to take to the school, and so he could get a lab coat because he was doing chemistry. And the school refused to take the £10. So he came back home and said, I can't pay for the lab coat. I said, that's ridiculous. Why not? He said, well, the school's cashless. I mean, completely cashless, to the point where he wouldn't take.
Your cash is no good here.
I know. It was just like, well, English case. We've offered to pay for the lab coat. We'll just take the lab coat. They can't say we're stealing it because we've offered to pay for it.
Yeah.
So, but in the end, I had to do this convoluted thing where I had to go to the local shop, give them a £10 note. They had, because I refused to have an online PayPal account. I don't want to do any online cash things because I want to deal in cash. So what I had to do was I had to go to the local shop, pay them £10. The shop was part of this whatever PayPal scheme it was the school had, then had to give me a receipt with a receipt number on, and Owen, my son, had to take that into college just to pay for it. Like, it's out. It's just stupid. I don't know why the colleges think it's this particular, but this college isn't specific, you know, or individual in doing this. A lot of schools are completely cashless now. But I think the thing is, if you have cash or you have a PIN number or a swipe card, that's your responsibility. That's your identity. You must look after that. But when you give your identity in the form of a biometric to a school, you're sort of abdicating that responsibility, and the school has that responsibility. The school has your identity, not you. So all you're doing when you present a fingerprint to school is saying to the school, I'm confirming this is me. You're not actually going up to somebody and saying, this is me. But actually, in order to get a library book out or to eat or to have registration, you don't need to prove it. Well, registration, fair enough, but it's certainly in order to eat, you don't need to prove it's you. But it's all about data and who's reading what. I mean, this is one of the things that microlibrarian systems, who initially were in primary schools, they tested the technology in China first before they brought it into the UK. And they were saying that you can filter library book reading reports by ethnicity, so you can see what different ethnic groups and what books they're getting out of the library are reading. You can see what different age groups are reading.
Who needs to know that?
Absolutely. Who needs to know that? But
I was just going to say, it's funny as well, like they say, right, we're going to go cashless in the school, but the whole like social aspect of using money and the communication between, you know, making a decision of, right, well, I've got a pound here. Do I want to have a burger and chips, or am I going to have, I don't know, a baked potato and a penguin biscuit, or I don't know, just making the decisions of what you're going to spend your money on. And isn't that what school's all about? Helping you, and you know, in your mathematics and your quantifying things and decision making, it's all there, isn't it? And yet that is kind of taken away by just it being, right, now you can eat, or I don't know, or even, do you know what, I'm not going to spend my money at school today, I'm going to save it up and buy chips on the way home. Or there's an old lady I know, and she recalls with glee this story very often, that her granny used to give her money to get the bus, and she would just walk instead of taking the bus, because then she'd have you know, tuppence or whatever to spend whatever she wanted to spend it on. And it's that kind of it's that kind of attitude, that kind, you know, that's kids being inventive with their lives and resourceful, exactly.
It's having a freedom of choice, isn't it?
Exactly, and that's just, like you say, it's being taken away because it's just, right, the school is allowing you to eat. It's allowing you to do this and that and the other. And another thing was that with the, like, registration, when they go in and they just, not necessarily biometrically, but a lot of schools now are doing, like, you register yourself in. I don't know, maybe it is biometric, but again, like, when all the class had to come together and the teacher would read out all the names and you would say yes or whatever, that's a communication, that's a greeting, that's a start of the day where you're all connecting. And I just think that feeling is being lost, and that kids, instead of going into school and having that kind of connection where, you know, you all start the day together and have this kind of greeting, it's not happening. You're just going in and registering yourself, and it's a cold clinical process that's happening. You don't have any kind of warm connection to what's going on.
No, absolutely. There's a disconnect that's happening in education between the human teacher that's teaching, and the this amount of interaction that children are now having with technology. And one of the things that Terry Doughty, who ran Action Rights for Children, was concerned about was because she used to be a teacher, and she said one of the most important parts of her for a teacher at the beginning of the day was to sort of make the eye contact with the child, and just sort of visually, are they okay, or do they look a bit upset, or you know, and if that's, even if it's with a RFID card or whatever it is, a PIN number that you register yourself, that sort of, like you say, that community, that sense of sort of starting the day off as a community isn't there anymore, because you just log in, like, you know, you're just part of a computer system rather than a team of people that are working together to achieve something.
Yeah, like you're a faceless worker at factory.
Yeah.
Like you're a faceless worker.
I mean, this
is like they're doing it at the stores now, where you go through the electronic, you know, you don't even interact with a cash register person anymore. You just swipe your card and off you go, or put your bill into the machine and get your change and off you go, you know?
Yeah, I think it was IBM did a really interesting advert, I think about 5 years ago, where they somebody went into a store and just basically picked up everything they wanted and then just walked out of the store. And as because they were chipped as a person, and because they were chipped and the RFID chips in the items that they had in the bag just interacted with the chip that they had in their arm, and the store just registered all that, the bank account was taken out. And I watched this and thought, gosh, that's a thief. And then I realized, at the end, it said IBM, this is the future of things to come sort of thing. And I thought, oh my goodness, yeah. You know, but I make a point of actually going to use a cashier, because that's somebody's job.
I know, it's funny. I've seen around and about so many banks closing, you know, banks, the buildings where banks used to be that are being, you know, I don't know, turned into coffee shops or flats or whatever. But yeah, because, you know, these kind of jobs, you know, they're going now. Where you used to have a tiller, now nobody, you can just use a machine these days, or online banking, all these kind of things. So
the only bank that I've seen that has been building banks is Metro Bank. They built one.
Is that online?
No, it's like a proper bank that you go into.
A sticks and bricks building where humans interact.
They just on the corner of Churchill Square there, the I don't know what kind of shop it was before, but that was all cordoned off because they had to dig down and like build the vault. And they're doing the same one in Eastbourne. That is the only bank that's building, and all the rest are closing and going online. And now, aren't they trying to charge people to have savings or have money in their bank account?
A bank, I just saw the report today that a German bank, it's not Deutsche, it's one of the smaller ones, but is going to start charging people a custodial fee to make deposits.
Yeah. Fuck.
To put your money in.
Yeah.
A custodial fee. What? You're taking custody of my money? Wait, that's a legal term. You know? Because by law over here, once you put your money, it was your money till you put it in the bank, by law, it's the bank's property. Oh, yeah.
Wow.
It's bizarre, isn't it?
It is, but I mean, so the way that schools are going, I mean, these children will be used to not dealing in any money at all and just dealing with plastic or biometrics, I guess.
Yeah. And that's just such a dumbing down as well, isn't it? Because the whole money thing is, I mean, that's such a part of mathematics, isn't it? Working out your money.
Yes.
That's what you...
I deal in cash, but I also have cards. But I find when I'm dealing with my card, I can easily lose track of how much I've spent. Whereas I've got physical cash in my purse, I think, oh my God, I had 20 quid, now it's only five, you know.
Yeah.
Whereas that doesn't happen. We've all been
If you watch someone who's having a disruption with their register, all of a sudden they can't make change. They can't in their head do the math to hand you back the correct amount of money, you know?
That's
they
right.
got to wait
yeah.
for it to
yeah.
pop up on the screen, you know?
Yeah.
And I found when I've got money in the wallet that I feel secure, whereas if I'm just using money on the card, I'm always a bit, have I got enough money? And so it gives you like the sense of security, doesn't it? Because you know that you've got it on you.
You got it there, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so that whole thing, like you were saying about the person going into the shop, they were RFID chipped and getting the food that was also RFID chipped and going out and, you know, that was the whole process. Then that as well is, it seems like it's a, hey, this is great, you know, I can just go and get things. But it's, unless you're keeping an eye on it, you could be just, you know, bankrupt within a week. And also, maybe you don't notice the prices going up and changing so much as well when you're just going in and picking things up and walking out again. So it's all geared for the marketplace and making money. And they always advertise and promote these things as being for your convenience. But actually, it's for their convenience because you are conveniently making them more money by just feeling, you know, comfortable and free to just go and pick anything up off the shelves. And that's what they're promoting in our kids, isn't it?
And they have to do less. They have to do less to get more.
But also, I think also as well, if everything's digital, it's all data. And the amount of data that can be taken from our shopping habits and where we are. I mean, if you go into Asda's nowadays, if you've got your Wi-Fi turned on your smartphone, the store will track your phone around the aisles and where you're lingering. It doesn't know who you are, but it knows there's a phone that's lingering at this point, lingering at that point, then going to XY till for this amount of money or whatever. It will all log. And but I think the thing with the IBM advert that struck me was that, oh my God, no, it was promoted as, oh, it's very safe because there'll be no more shoplifting. This is for a safer society. Nobody can actually steal anything anymore because it's all connected with smart RFID tags talking to each other. So it's not just about convenience for us. A massive convenience. I don't have any store cards. I will not give any store my data of what I'm buying and when I'm buying it, absolutely whatsoever. You know, they can. I spend in cash as much as I can. But it's all about data and marketing for them. And the data is worth more to them, I think, than the profits that they're making. Because, of course, the more data they've got on how consumers move around the store, spend at what time they spend on, and the type of person that's coming in. I mean, Sir Alan Sugar, who does the, what's the show, The Apprentice over here in the UK. He's an advisor to the government, but he did the Amstrad computers years ago. He has something now called AmScreen. And AmScreen, Tesco have it in all their forecourt by the cash tills. And what it is there's a television screen, but it's not a television screen, it's a digital screen. And the actual screen itself is a camera. It will look at you. It will identify whether you're white, what age you are, you know, and then it will deduce by you and then what you spend at that time, what it thinks you want to see. So it's constantly learning. It's then looking at the next person, looking at their spending, da 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 da. And so this sort of technology is all about data. And I think in 1 week when the screens first came out, and that must have been a couple of years ago, they were screening something like 30 million faces a week in the UK. Because people didn't realise they were just going up to the till and buying whatever they were, buying what kind of petrol they were buying. And these screens were taking in all the data of the type of faces and the purchases. And of course, all the time this is happening, it's the artificial intelligence behind it is just getting increasingly more intelligent. So it's and this is sort of what's happening in schools at the moment. I mean, I don't know if any of you have children in schools, but children increasingly now, especially in secondary schools and actually in primary schools, have something which it's called a virtual learning platform. So they don't bring their textbooks home and do their maths in the textbooks anymore. You have to log on to My Maths or whatever it is, and you go and do your maths homework online, press send, and it's automatically marked, and the teacher just sees the results. But what the virtual learning platform does is it will log if a particular child has spent longer on a particular problem than another problem. It will log, then it will assume that this child is better at adding up sums than taking away sums because it spends longer on taking away sums. And so you start to get this sort of digital profile of that particular pupil on that subject that's being built up over a period of years. You know, if you start this in primary school and you leave at 16, there'll be a mathematical profile of how good that child is. Now, if you couple that with things like history, science, English, music, anything else that can be done in a virtual learning platform, you get this very, very detailed profile of a human, of pupil, when they leave school when they're sort of 18 or 19 or even 16. That and it's not particularly the school that has this profile, it's the commercial company that owns the virtual learning platform that's supplying the school with it. I mean, the school will get the data given to them by the commercial company and they'll be able to analyze it. But I tell you what, that commercial company will be using that data far more than the school will be using the data, because they'll be using that data to learn and keep predicting and keep predicting and keep predicting what future pupils are going to do. And this is very prevalent in the United States. There's massive educational tech companies over there. There's one in particular called Newton, spelt K-N-E-W-T-O-N-S. And back in 2012, their CEO, a guy called Joseph Ferreira, was doing a talk about how data mined children were and how the tech industry was the fourth biggest industry in the world. The amount of data they could mine from children in US education was about 12 times as much as Google could get from an individual. Absolutely vast. If you type in Newton education data into YouTube, you'll be able to see the 12-minute video. And this guy is just saying, oh, yeah, children are the most data-minded in society, and blah, blah, blah. He said, we'll be able to predict whether they can do maths better in the afternoon after a bacon sandwich, or they can do English better in the morning on a Tuesday. And this is how specific the computer can get to identify how good a child is, or when a child is most optimized for learning. So I could easily see, with if this goes the way it's going to go, all the way education tech companies want it to go, is that we won't have classrooms anymore. It will literally be a virtual artificial intelligence computer program that will be teaching your child on probably a very good individual personal plan. But then the amount of data that this then gives that commercial company is unbelievable. I mean, they can actually use the camera in the computer to look at where the eyes are focusing on the screen. Virtual learning can see how quick you read a book, and the more computerized homework or learning a child does on these virtual learning platforms, maybe it is good for the child in the fact that the platform can then steer her homework in the direction that the child needs in order to get it up to where it needs to be. But also as well, the amount of data that individual child gives is very detailed, quite personal. And at this point in time, we don't know in 2016 how or where that data will go, maybe in 20 years' time, and how it will be used.
For like credit scores and things like that.
If you're like a Delta, a Beta, when you go for that job, when you finish school, you know, it'll look at it and say, well, no, actually, the way you learn, you're only going to be good enough for working in McDonald's or.
Isn't that the premise of the film Divergent?
I don't know.
Yeah, where
I'm not sure.
Where they they sort of pass school and then they're all tested and they're given their the status in life on which group that they now have to go and live with. Pretty much. I'm just looking at the Newton's website here, and their logo is quite interesting, with a little dot caged in what appears to be like a 666. crazy. And it seems to, if they're producing all the textbooks and think, what textbooks in inverted commas, they're steering the learning or the knowledge that those kids are taking on. It's sort of homogenizing and creating idiocracy, really, I would say.
And also all this kind of data mining and kind of profiling for the kind of lesson that you're going to get, say, in mathematics or English or whatever it happens to be, it still doesn't take into account the human factor, that you have good days, bad days, things happen.
Yeah.
Your boyfriend leaves you, a family member dies, you see a car accident on the way to school. I don't know, just anything that might come up that might affect the way that you're feeling on that particular day. None of these things are taken into account. So it's all very cold, just mining of details, and like good teachers are the ones who pick up on those little nuances, like you were saying. You know, they can read what's going on with the pupil themselves, so that they can pull something through the eyes, the eye contact, when seeing when someone is distracted and finding methods to bring them back in and engage them. All these kind of things, you just don't get it from a computer that's simply looking for data on how you're working rather than how to develop you in a greater way. And also the way you learn,
the transhumanist folk just to have enormous erections over this kind of data and all that stuff they're getting, because every selling point they give you, there's a half a dozen ugly things it can be used for too.
Yes. Oh, yeah. And the way they sell it as well, they'll be standing there saying, this is great. We can, profile your child and put their education to them in exactly the way that they need it. And that's not, they may be able to do a small amount of, bringing something to your child at their level, but they're not really going to be able to, if you don't get something, a computer showing it to you over and over again is not necessarily going to make you get it any better. Sometimes you just need that human contact,
also, it's been proven that you take less on board by reading from a screen than actually from a book.
Than hearing. Well, and also from hearing.
Yeah.
That's why oral traditions still exist. Because you get the inflection. You get all of that, it's a complete communication.
It's like with forums and that kind of thing, on Facebook or anything like this, everything is so, you you don't get the inflection, and often, it might sound like you're being a bit arsy about something, or, people get the wrong impression about what you're saying. If you make a joke, they maybe don't, you just don't get it
way. That's why it's silent weapons for a silent war.
Yeah.
Bill
Cooper,
salute you. It's been a long journey. I've learned so much over the past decade or so, but it's nice because other parents have helped me, and now I'm sort of inadvertently helping other parents. I didn't know anything about legislation or the Data Protection Act or the Freedom of Information Act or how government works or how a bill got passed through Parliament. And it's been a really interesting process, but it's really, really opened my eyes up to what our education system is now. And it's nothing like it was when I was at school. I mean, I'm in my mid-40s and we went to school to learn. And I've learned from home educating my two children. I mean, they're 17 and 18 now. But when we sort of taught them from 11 till 16, what I think I did more than anything else is to teach them how to discern, because there is so much information out there. It wasn't a fact that I had to give them stuff that they needed to take with them for the rest of their life, because we're in a digital age and they can you know, given, you know, if we don't have a solar flare, they should really be able to sort of look at anything they want on the internet. But it's been able to discern what's good information and what's bad information, because there's so much information out there. But going back to the virtual learning platforms, what happened in the States was data is only good data if it's accurate. So, of course, it's all very well doing your maths homework online, but it could be your older sister that's doing that, or your mum, or your best friend. So what they decided to do in San Diego, I think, is Encinitas. There's a school district there. And this virtual learning program company came on and said to the schools, we're going to give you 2,500 iPads for free. And so the schools went, brilliant. And they said, but what's going to happen is every 60 seconds, camera in the iPad is going to do a facial scan of a pupil doing the homework so we know who it is. Because in that case, they absolutely know that the data on that pupil is the data on that pupil. And unfortunately, the particular educational tech company targeted this at primary schools. And so the parents freaked out about it. You know, you're not taking a picture of my kid every 60 seconds, fair enough. And this is what happened in the UK. They initially sort of did this fingerprint technology in primary schools and said, oh, kids can just wander in and out the library. It'll make it easy for the kids to get their dinner. Not really banking on the fact that all the primary school parents, or quite a few of them, stood in the school playground and talked to each other before they picked their kids up from school or dropped them off. So because there was a pretty good outcry sort of back 10 years ago, which is when my children were at primary school, these technology biometric tech companies sort of thought, oh, this isn't working in primary schools. We'll just shift it into secondary schools. Parents can't talk to each other. The kids are a bit more tech savvy, and they're not likely to sort of say, I don't know if, I mean, I've even at primary school, I sort of say to my kids, what have you done at school today? Nothing. You just get this one word answer. I'm not going to say, oh, we've got a fingerprinter today, mum, for a school dinner system, because they're just like that. But I think probably what will happen in, I think that I can sort of see the point of, you know, I'm not against biometric technology. It's a tool, which like a hammer you can build a house with, or you can use it to do damage to somebody or something. The technology is here. I think the big, big problem I have with it is that there was absolutely no transparency, whatsoever. And if the biometric tech industry had said, we're going to do this because it's going to make it more secure, but there's a slight possibility, we don't know how secure it's going to be in, you know, 50 years' time, then we could make an informed decision as parents. But that decision got completely taken away from me. It was up to the school to make that decision for me. And in fact, the biometric industry was selling a solution to a problem that didn't exist. Oh, well, you know, we can improve kids' reading habits. Nope, that didn't happen. Oh, we can improve kids' eating habits. Nope, that didn't happen. Oh, we can improve registration if we take the fingerprint. Nope, that didn't happen. And I don't know, Swami, if you remember a few years ago, there was a case in Texas, San Antonio, where there was a school child called Andrea Hernandez who refused to take a active RFID card. There was a company that decided to go into Texas schools and said to the schools, you know, we can improve your registration and attendance at schools if the kids are wearing this active RFID card. So right. RFID means radio frequency identification. And so you get two types of RFID. So if you have a card in your, a bank card, that's got a passive chip in it. So if you took it up to a scanner or swiped it, the scanner would wake the chip up, exchange the information, and then as you take your card away, the chip would go back to sleep again and be dormant. But an active RFID chip is essentially a radio antenna. So it's sending out a signal.
Right,
every
it's pulsing. Minute. Right.
Yeah, it's pulsing. So,
we're just coming up to the school district. Can you just hold that thought? We're just start the next part of the show. Please refresh your players and you can listen back in.